And James chapter 1, I'm going to have to give you a minute or two to get there because the verse is so short, I'll be done before you even find James, probably. James chapter 1, and we're going to begin a series, I'm not sure how long, on anger and just looking at different aspects of it. Now, you may not think it applies to you. Okay, if that's what you want to think. I think that would be very weird if there's anyone that says, I never get angry, okay? So it might mean defining what you mean by anger, you know, like blow up, yelling, screaming, throwing dishes, or whatever the case is. But we're gonna look at this topic here because I think it applies to all of us. So let's begin by reading our text, James chapter 1 and verse 20. Let's read it together. Read it with me. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. So wrath, anger, whatever other synonyms we want to throw out here for the word anger, the verse says it does not work the righteousness of God. They're opposites. They cannot be together. Can an angry person also be righteous? Not if they're displaying their anger. They can't be. They're diametrically opposed, okay? That's like saying, can Christ... and again, it depends on how you're defining anger there. Can an angry person be righteous? What if they're not displaying their anger? Can they be righteous? Ooh, well, when you consider the fact that anger isn't just anger when it comes out, it's already anger in our heart in different ways. Physical, emotional, spiritual wounds happen, and they prove the truth of this verse. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Anger, it kills people. It turns children into rebels. It disintegrates families. It divides churches. And we all perhaps have anger stories that we could share. Maybe about ourselves, maybe about others. There are anger seminars, anger workbooks, anger therapists, anger management programs. I mean, anger, it's something that is a part of life, okay? And it always will be. God's word, however, is not silent on this thing called anger. There are, in fact, references to anger in virtually every book of the Bible. Before we get to the question, why do people get angry? Okay, let's first ask this question. What is anger? What do you think anger is? Go ahead and throw some suggestions out to me. Outbursts, okay? Emotional outbursts. What else do you think anger is? Just being unhappy, okay? Any other ideas? Violence, yes. Being frustrated, really? Interesting, okay, all right. What else do you think anger is? So we've got... outbursts, okay, violence, frustration. Can you think of anything else? What's that? Feelings, certain feelings we may have. Yes, yep. It's a sin. That's awesome. Thank you. Now, what are some of the visible indications of anger? Yelling. I heard yelling. What else? A red face. Oh, yeah. Depressing. Okay. All right. Language. Yeah. other visible indications of anger? Body language, road rage. Okay, interesting terms. Yep. What? A bad look. Okay, yes. Like you come home from work at the end of your day, and we'll leave this gender neutral, and you walk in the house and you can tell your spouse is angry. Okay. There's visible indicators of that. You guys have mentioned some really good ones. So, okay, so we're thinking anger right now. So why do people get angry? Why is it people get angry? Why do you think people get angry? Don't get their way, okay? My rights have been violated. All right. You can't find something. Where are those keys? What? They're in the river. Could I have some men remove this individual here? Wow, can you believe he just said that? My wallet still hurts from that occasion. The keys are in the river. I guess I opened the door for that. Okay. Was that an anger experience? No, it wasn't, actually. No, no. Well, it depends on how you define anger. I did try to ram him with my kayak to make him flip over in the river. I was already wet. It didn't matter if I went in again. Okay, so why do people get angry? Let me give you, I think I have seven different ways or reasons people get angry. And I think one of you all mentioned this one. Number one, he doesn't get his way. Now, I'm saying he, but that's going to be applying to both genders. He doesn't get his way. There's an example of that in the Bible. Do you remember King Ahab? Okay, King Ahab and the other person was Naboth. Naboth's vineyard, okay? King Ahab wanted that vineyard, and he talked to Naboth. Naboth wouldn't let him buy the vineyard, and so he went home heavy and displeased. He didn't get his way. Now, let's look at the verse. 1 Kings 21 and verse 4. It's not going to be on the screen, so I'll read it for you. And Ahab came into his house, listen, heavy and displeased, because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, for he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he, Ahab, laid him down upon his bed, turned away his face, and would eat no bread. Now, whenever you read that or hear that, what comes to your mind? Spoiled, a spoiled little child, okay? Get my way. And they're just being obstinate. They're in a corner pouting, maybe. And we see that in children, don't we? What they want, they don't get, so they explode or react in some way, okay? But this isn't limited to children, is it? Maybe we don't display the childish actions like cross our arms and a poochy lip comes out and we sit in a corner and won't talk to anyone, okay? We want what we want, we don't get what we want, and then there's an anger reaction of some type because we didn't get what we wanted. Here's a second one. Because things seem out of his control. A person gets angry because things seem to be out of his control. The example from God's word, demonstrated by King Saul, okay? He lost control over David. Now, remember, in those early years, David is gaining in popularity. The people are loving him more than they're loving the king. And Saul, jealousy, lots of things going on there. But David's popularity kept growing. What did Saul do? He tried to kill David, right? He tried to control that situation. It didn't work. Popularity growing. He tried to control it. He couldn't control it. He got more angry. Now, let's try to identify with Saul here, okay? When people do things that threaten our security, okay, our security, that's our sense of everything is secure and in its place and order in my life. But when things are not in its place and order in our life, in other words, it's not secure within our grasp, okay? When things threaten our security, or they slight our ego, frustration, I think that was mentioned, frustration and hurts set in over these situations and or over people that we cannot control or change. And it eats in us like a cancer because we can't control it, okay? And it makes people grumpy. Maybe that's a nice way to put it, but that's a really, really anemic word for anger. We're not getting what we want. And in this case, it's something that seems to be out of our control. Now, number three, it sounds similar. A person gets angry to control. It's not a typo. It's tied to the last one. Sometimes people use anger to control. Parents, have we not done this with our children? Okay. The voice gets louder. We're mad. Look, I was a kid once, and I wasn't dumb. I come home, or I'm outside playing, and I hear one of my parents in the house. I know, ooh, they're mad, okay? And it's mad or anger over something that one of us kids isn't doing. So what does a parent do? They say, oh, will you please, please clean up your room? I have told you 100 times. Will you please clean up? How many times do I have to tell you? Their voice raises. Why? They're trying to control, trying to get that child to do something that they won't do, they don't want to do. So anger, we use that to control people. In a classroom, those of us that teach, we have to be careful that we don't use anger to control. And so some people use anger to get you to back off. Okay? Now, maybe you can visualize this, or maybe you've seen it. They use anger to get people to back off or to give in to what they want. It can even, anger can even cause some people to cater to you. Now, what's an expression that might fit there with that thought? Your anger, your reactions, and I'm not talking about explosive anger, just your anger, your upsetness causes people to cater to you, walking on eggshells around you because you don't want to get this person upset. Because if you get this person upset, this is going to happen. So a person can get angry to control. There's a loud voice. Yes, there's that fist on the kitchen table trying to get their attention. Okay? It was mentioned earlier, a glare, a look. Okay? And it's like all men cower when they know they're in trouble. Okay? A manipulative threat. It's not yelled. They're upset about something. Okay? You are upset about something. And you don't yell, you don't scream because you're righteous. But if you don't do what I want you to do, then I will. A manipulative threat is an expression of anger, but from someone who's trying to control with their anger. It's all intended to keep people hopping. anger can control. All right, number four, another reason why people get angry. A person gets angry in response to hurt or mistreatment. David and his men, they were rebuffed by Nabal. What does David do? Do you remember the story? He straps on his sword and he's going to go take care of business. He's not just going to go take care of Nabal. He's going to wipe out the whole tribe. He was mad. He had been insulted and mistreated. That's a typical reaction, I think, when we're hurt or mistreated. And not to say we're animals, but I mean, you can see that in the animal kingdom. You take a dog that's hurt and you approach it, it might bite you. Okay? Sharp, sudden pain easily triggers anger. Now, this kind of anger can often grow little by little until it comes out in some form. And this coming out can be triggered by a slight mistreatment. Has that ever happened to you? You said something to some person, and it wasn't a big deal. And Mount Vesuvius, where did this come from? Well, there was anger beneath the surface already, and that slight mistreatment caused it to come out. Number five, a fifth reason why people get angry, because his pride is wounded. Out of wounded pride, we can lash out at someone for what may be a just criticism, in fact. Wounded pride hurts. I've heard this expression before, maybe you have too. Hurt people, okay? So, number six, a person may get angry as a spillover from unresolved guilt. The anger comes as a spillover from unresolved guilt. This one's interesting. Here's how it works. Now, I'm going to be giving you seven reasons. And if you go home and you're angry tonight, it doesn't mean you're guilty of all seven of these, okay? This is a reason why a person may get angry. Here's how this works. Recall David in the Old Testament. He was guilty of immorality, a covered-up murder. He was, and before he had confessed it, so he's dealing with guilt. Before he had a chance, before he came to a point of confessing and repenting, he was told a story about a rich man who took advantage of a poor man. And what did David do? He exploded in anger over that. How could that man do that? You see, covered sins make us touchy. Covered sins make us critical of others. There's a sense of, I guess the psychological aspect of this is there's a sense of us trying to transfer our guilt to someone else. Hence the critical spirit that a person can have. And then number seven, people get angry in order to set wrong things right. Yes, this is the kind of anger that I only have. I only have this kind of anger. This is the good kind of anger, right? When a situation is wrong, anger is the motivation to set things right. For example, you see two boys picking on a smaller boy. Man, you're jumping in, right? That's anger trying to turn a wrong into a right. Adults criticizing another member of the church. What about that? Do we still get angry over that to where we're motivated to jump in and make a wrong right. We should get angry about that. Anger, it should motivate us to do something, okay? But we do have to be careful with this number seven here, because it's coming from our sense of justice. It feels right, okay? You see, I had this experience a few years ago. Saw a car in line at Taco Bell. And my wife and I were on our bikes, and the windows were down. It was summer, and you could have heard them three blocks away. Him, okay? And he was out of control. He was in the driver's seat, and there was a smaller child in the back seat. And he didn't make contact with her, okay? But what I did is I rode my bike across the busy road and up that sidewalk right alongside the drive-through there. And all I'm thinking is, buddy, you put one hand on her and you're getting yanked out of there. Okay? I was that intent. I intentionally crossed the busy road and put myself in a place where it's none of your business. Leave it alone. No, that's wrong. This is a wrong in the making, and I need to make it right. Okay? It feels right when we're making a wrong a right. Because of our sense of justice, it's justifiable, that kind of anger. But that's why we have to be careful with this. We can transfer the rightness of our anger to whatever action we choose to take. So if we can make it the action right, we're justified in doing this. So the anger may be right, but the action may be sinful. I grab the guy by the collar, I pull him out of the vehicle, and I proceed to beat him over the head with a paving brick that was on alongside the drive-through there. I'm going to justify that because I was righting a wrong. We have to be careful that we don't use our righteous motive to justify wrong actions. But here's a second problem with righteous anger, okay? There's a temptation to make all our anger righteous and justifiable. I'm feeling angry. I got to spin this in some way to make it righteous. That's kind of what we can do. And can you see how easy it would be to do that? I mean, after all, part of anger is the belief that I'm right. I have never gotten into an argument with someone over the fact that I believed I was wrong. It's always because I'm right and they're wrong. I was wronged in what they did to me, and I'm right in feeling that way, and I need to right this wrong and put them in their place. We have to be careful about that. They have done wrong, or I have been wronged. We didn't get our way. And by the way, we didn't get our way. Our way was something really good and righteous. And they didn't let us get our way. Our pride was wounded. We determined that something isn't fair. Boom! We're angry because something took place that wasn't fair. And we justify it with the fact that, well, this isn't fair. Whatever it is, when we turn it into a wrong that we need to make right, and we do that to justify our anger. Of the seven reasons, I'm going to read them off to you again. We don't get our way. Things are out of our control. We're trying to control things. We're responding to a perceived hurt or mistreatment. Our pride has been wounded. A spillover from unresolved guilt. Or number seven, trying to set a wrong right. Here's the question. Which of these do you think is the most common? What do you think? Pride. Okay. Yeah, good. There's no wrong answer here, by the way. Someone didn't get their way. Okay. All of the above. Okay. That's probably a good answer. It's probably a right answer, too. So, here's the last question on Roman numeral 1. Which one do you struggle with? Which is your preferred form or reason that you get angry? All right. Now, let's move on to number 2, forms of anger. Number 1 is a temper tantrum. Who wants to define temper tantrum? And don't say 3-year-old or 13-year-old at Walmart. Temper tantrum. Yeah, unplanned outburst of anger and frustration. It's not planned, okay? Boom, it's there. And if a child, we call it a temper tantrum. Can we as adults have temper tantrums? Oh, yeah. Yes, we can. Number 2, another form of anger, rage. Violent anger. Here's a third form, frustration. That was mentioned earlier. A feeling of dissatisfaction resulting from unfulfilled needs or unresolved problems. So I have a need, it's not getting met. There's a problem, it's not getting resolved. It's still not getting resolved. It's still not getting resolved, or at least the way I think it should be. Frustration. It's a form of anger. Because then what does it can lead to? Anger for the reason of trying to control. If you don't do this, I'm going to do this. Okay? And that all comes from that underlying frustration. Here's a fourth one. Irritation. That's just being annoyed. By the way, being annoyed, that just seems, the irritation, that just seems like such a small form of anger, okay? That maybe we should just kind of just look over that. But we can't. All forms of anger are sin. We're going to be looking at all of these and why they're wrong in the weeks to come. But irritation is a form. Number 5, pouting, which is showing irritation by a gloomy silence or reserve. Oh, that's a whole different form of anger there. Anger, it's inside, okay? We're angry. Honey, what's wrong? Nothing. Did you have a good day? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll be out in the garage, okay? I'll come back in next week. There's anger there, okay? And it's showing itself through this gloomy silence or reserve. Number 6, resentment. The feeling of displeasure at some act, remark, person that we regard as an injury or an insult. Resentment. Now, this is something that can just carry on beneath the surface. One resentment after another resentment after another resentment. More frustration until it comes out in some form, okay? Resentment. And then number 7, tied to number 6, bitterness, a feeling of antagonism, hostility, or resentfulness. Now, later tonight, you can take these 7 forms that we've just gone through and try to match them with the 7 reasons that people show anger. The first 7 things, those 7 reasons people show anger, and then look at these 7 forms to see how they fit in there with what you're familiar with in those situations. But not right now, because right now we have to go on to number 3, understanding anger. Ephesians 4:26, it says, "Be ye angry and sin not." Don't you love that verse? I mean, it's God giving us permission to be angry. Just righteous anger. Okay. All right. Any other suggestions or thoughts on that? Be angry and sin not. But then in the same chapter, we're talking five verses down, verse 40 or 31, here's what God says. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger be put away from you with all malice. Be angry, get rid of it. Kind of contradicting each other there, those two verses there. What is going on there? We're told to be angry, but then we're told in verse 31 to put it off. The emphasis, here's where context is so important, okay? The emphasis of verse 26 is not be angry. What does that verse say? Could we have that back on the screen, please? Thank you. I appreciate them up there. Be angry and sin not. That's the emphasis right there. Sin not. We're going to be angry, but with our anger, we have to make sure that we don't sin. In other words, don't sin with your anger. Can you help getting angry? What do you think about that? You don't have to even say an answer. I mean, can you say, well, I can't help it when I get angry? Well, when we get angry, don't sin with it. And we're going to come back to that thought here right at the end. So let's understand this first about anger. Number one, anger is an emotion. That's all it is. It's not a voice. It's not an action. It's not a volume. It's an emotion. Physically, what happens when we get angry? Anybody? Blood pressure goes up. Right. Before that even happens, our brain kicks in and secretes adrenaline into our system, which then causes more blood to pump to the brain. Okay, that actually takes place. And we get higher blood pressure. We get an increased heart rate. Our pulse starts racing. Now, whether we are aware of that or not, we are aware of this. We are aware of how we feel inside. Because anger is an emotion. It's not an emotion that was the result of the fall of man in the Garden of Eden. God created us with this emotion. Jesus experienced anger, but we don't see Jesus sinning with his anger. Okay, so it is an emotion. It's part of our human existence. It's part of our whole range of feelings that God created us with. It affects who we are. It affects how we interact with other people, how we respond to life's problems and challenges, this emotion of anger. It's so integrated into every part of our life. Now, number two, about anger. As an emotion, anger is to some extent involuntary. Yes, it's not my fault. To some extent. Now, we like this, okay? But let me explain that phrase, to some extent. But let's I guess, distinguish between anger as a feeling and anger as an action. When we say that someone has an anger problem, we are generally referring to that person's expression of their feeling of anger, right? So when the Bible tells us to put off anger in Ephesians 4:31, I believe its primary emphasis is the action of our anger needs to be put off. I say primary because godliness, growing godliness, that certainly can restrain the feelings of anger that we have. Now, just think about that for a moment. Maybe before you were saved, you were an angry person. And then Jesus came into your life and you fully grasped the concept of forgiveness and the hurt you had caused God and the grace and the mercy that he has shown you. And it has just melted your anger away. As you become more godly, the feeling of anger can lessen. Those forms of anger that we feel when we haven't been treated right, those feelings can lessen as we become more godly. So in that sense, we choose what to do when we feel angry. It's not out of our control. Number three, emotions are reflectors. I like this concept here. Emotions are reflectors. That's all they are. They're just a reflector. This isn't an attempt to minimize our emotions, because our emotions are real, they're powerful, they're valid, and those of us that have spouses, we should never minimize our spouse's emotions or what they're feeling, okay? Even if they make totally no sense to us. Emotions are definitely more than just a reflector, but they do reflect our situation. Let me explain. Part of our human nature is to respond emotionally to what is going on around us. God created us and gave us emotions. What a gift. What a beautiful gift. Can you imagine what life would be like without emotion? As a pastor, I would hate it because no one would ever laugh at my jokes. You would just sit there. Wait a minute. Some of you do that now. Oh, all right. Never mind. Life with no emotions. That would be the animal kingdom. Okay? The animal kingdom. No emotions whatsoever. Now, I know if you have a pet, you know, like I have two girls, we would swear they have emotions, okay? But let's simplify it. A tree. It's hot out. What does a tree do? It's cold. What does a tree do? The wind is blowing really hard. What does a tree do? It's raining cats and dogs. Back to the pets. What does a tree do? Shows no emotion whatsoever. Doesn't show any displeasure with any unpleasant circumstances, but it doesn't get to display or feel joy when the sun is out and it's a beautiful spring morning, and over here on this arm you've got a little nest of baby birds and you get to watch them all day long, except a tree doesn't have eyes. But no emotions. How about this part of God's creation? A rock. Aren't you glad you're not a rock? God made it. No emotions whatsoever. What a gift that we have, this thing we call emotions, feelings, because it gives color to life, okay? Now picture this. A spouse is returning home from a two-week business trip. They're flying into the airport at a certain time. The other spouse and the children, they're there at the airport to greet this returning family member. They've been gone for 2 weeks. The spouse and the children, they're there. They miss this family member. They're there. They got their signs, welcome home, or, you know, whatever the case is. And they're all smiles. What are they feeling right now? Emotion, but what specific? Happy. What else? Love, joy. All of these wonderful emotions that they're feeling right there at that moment. Maybe excitement. Oh, I can't wait to see Daddy. I can't wait to see Daddy. Or curiousness. You know, like, ooh, is Daddy bringing home something for me from his trip? Okay. Longing. It's been 2 weeks. The plane's taking too long to taxi down the runway. I wish they were walking through that door right now. I can't wait another second. Now, did they choose to have those feelings? No. The feelings that we just mentioned were involuntary. They involuntarily reflected the situation. Emotions are reflectors. Okay, now there's an example of the feelings reflecting the situation. Now, let's change it a little bit. There they are. They're in the airport. They're waiting for the plane to land. They're feeling all of those feelings that you all just mentioned and maybe even felt yourself. And an announcement comes over the PA system. It's a bomb threat. They have to evacuate the building. What are they feeling right now? Fear. Probably fear. Maybe the adult with the children, fear and protection. I've got to get my children out of here, okay? Instantly, just like that, did they choose that feeling? Nope. Our emotions reflect our circumstances. Now, let's develop that a little bit deeper, okay? Emotions reflect more than circumstances. So we have our emotions, they're reflecting circumstances, but let's take it a little deeper. They also reflect us, not just the circumstances around us. For example, differences in people result in different emotional reflections. We don't all reflect the same emotion from the same situation. Let me give you an example. It's a busy street. You're in the middle of an urban center, busy street, and a man steps off a bus, pulls out a gun, and starts shooting. Okay? Lots of people around. They're going to have different reflections. Their emotions are going to reflect differently. For example, a policeman on the corner. His emotions are safety of others, justice, neutralize the threat. That's what he's feeling right at the moment. Children on the street, they're feeling fear. Probably most people are feeling fear at that moment. Now, I want to throw in a third person here. There's a person of whatever age, and they're watching this thinking, oh, this is so cool. Whoa. Did you see that guy when he got shot? Oh, man, that was so cool. Now, would some people respond that way? Yeah, they would. They would, okay. Now, why those three differences? It's also true, let's take another step, our choices that we make, they play a part in our emotional reflection and how our emotions reflect circumstances. Let me explain what I mean by that. The policeman, he made choices to go to police academy. He made choices in his training. He's made those choices in training. He's made a choice to serve and protect, and that adjusted how his emotional reflectors reacted during a situation, okay? Now, the other person that was like, whoa, this is so cool. Why that reaction? That person, and there are studies that show there are people that would react that way, okay? And the studies stem from this. That person had made choices in the past. For example, they spend the last 10 years of their life playing video games with graphic violence, wantonly destroying and killing people and cutting off their heads and all the blood and the gore, and it's entertainment for them, okay? His choices have influenced how his emotional reflectors work in given such circumstances. So, when we consider our choices form our character. Our character today is a sum total of the choices we've made in the past. So we have our choices, forms our character, and our emotions are not necessarily out of our control now when we think of that. because it all stems back to choices which control our character, which adjust how our emotions reflect a situation. So a situation happens. Some people take it in stride. Some people blow up. Many times that comes from past choices. But what that does point out is our choices can change how our emotions are reflecting things. We do have some aspect of control over our emotions. Now, let's bring Jesus into all of this. That's always a good thing, right? The goal of every Christian is to become like Christ. The emotional result of Christ-likeness is that in any situation, our feelings will be what Christ's feelings would be. You have heard the slogan, "What would Jesus do?" Right? How about, what would Jesus feel? Especially in this culture where everything is dictated by how a person feels. We should be focused on what would Jesus feel in this situation. So, if I'm angered where Jesus would not have been angered, because whatever it was, my rights were violated. I didn't like the way this person talked to me. I didn't get what I wanted. If I'm angered over things that Jesus would not have been angered about, then something in my life, forget what the other person has done or hasn't done. If I'm angry over something that Jesus would not have gotten angry about, something in my life needs to change because I'm not like Christ. And the anger that I feel, it's not righteous anger trying to right a wrong, okay? The anger that I'm feeling is revealing that something in my life is not right. Now, would Jesus get mad at someone for the way they spoke to them? I don't remember the reference. I think there's a passage in the Bible that says, as a lamb to the slaughter, he opened not his mouth. As they mocked and jeered him on the road to Calvary, he didn't say anything to them. As they put the purple robe on him and smashed a crown of thorns on his head, mocking him, he is the King of Kings. He didn't say a word. We can't use the logic when it comes to our anger. Well, I can't help myself. How about this one? They pushed my buttons. Or blame it on other feelings or circumstances in our life. I'm angry right now because of this thing that just took place in my day. We can't do that. We instead must acknowledge that my anger, my temper, my self-pity, my resentment that I have reflects, because it is a reflector, it reflects my un-Christ-likeness in my life. So how would you describe someone who has a strong godly character? Anybody? Give me some character traits of someone who has a strong godly character. Humble. Joyful, patient. What, kind? Okay. Loving? Yeah. Long-suffering. Man, couldn't the list just go on and on? I just saw the time. It better not go on and on. Okay. Who is someone that is strong in godly character? Okay. Here's the answer. Someone that is strong in godly character. Proverbs 16:32. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he that ruleth his spirit, his emotions, better than he that taketh the city. We're just going to stop there for tonight. Just going to explore more next week. Okay, I hope to see y'all back. I apologize for the time. So if you don't stay to pray, I understand, but do pray tonight. Thank you.